This is Tall Tale TV, your podcast for sci-fi and fantasy short stories. This story has multiple parts. To listen to the entire story in one place, visit talltaletv.com/series. Of Portals and Portents by Leslie Herron. Chapter 4, Kyanite. To a Selkie, water is an integral part of life. For them, the gentle waves of the ocean or the rocking pull of a river was like being free. No, not free, at peace. It brought a sense of balance, of belonging, and even a reminder of home. For those that made the sacrifice to live inland, however, they forever pined for that small part of them that was missing. Pyra was no exception, and with so much weighing on her mind, it was no wonder she once again found herself sitting on the bank of the river. Her toes were pressed into the silt of a shallow eddy as she watched glittering lightning bugs dancing lazily and playing tag with the scattered moonlight on the rippling water. The River Teviot was the very lifeblood of Ebra. It was an immense body of water that stretched from the very peaks of the mountains to the north to where it drained into the ocean at the southern end of the country. Some portions were over a mile wide, but where Pyra sat, the bends and curves of the land calmed the raging torrent into a gentle eddy, a perfect place to mull over any one of the thousands of problems that troubled her. A rustle in the reeds to her left pulled Pyra's attention from the river, and her hand snapped down to the weapon at her side. She relaxed when she saw the blade of a silver halberd bobbing in her direction.
Hello, Ondine.
She looked back over the water.
Isn't it a bit late for you to be out looking for me?
The dryad gave a short bow.
Your Majesty has been out so long that late has become early. I begin to worry.
I don't know why. Elias's armies patrol this area. Pyra pursed her lips at the words. Another item on her list of problems. She had pleaded with her husband to return the undead to rest, now that the country no longer required their services. But he outright refused, telling her that the need for an undying soldier was greater now than ever. She sighed.
I'm not in any danger.
Undine clicked her tongue against her teeth.
That is not why I've come all the way out here.
As she wiggled her bare toes in the mud, a flurry of tiny fish swam to investigate, and Pyra felt a small smile on her lips. It was short-lived, though, as her mind wandered back to the dark storm hanging over her.
I do not wish to go back into that tower.
Noting how tiny the queen's words sounded, Undine stepped closer. She leaned against her halberd as she set her sights across the open field around them.
You cannot avoid the king forever.
For a brief moment, sadness swelled up inside Pyra, before a scowl pulled at her features and she scooped up a rock, heaving it into the river with a petulant huff.
He will not listen to reason, Undine. I am his wife, his queen, and he refuses to see that this...
She chucked another stone into the water.
Idiotic plan of his will only plunge our nations into farther chaos.
Like the last ember in the fireplace, her anger was spent, and she sighed, slumping her shoulders.
There's something different about my husband. He is not the man I remember. Of course he isn't.
Undine looked over at her ward.
Nor are you the woman he left behind. You have both changed in your time apart.
She let out a wry chuckle.
For one, the two of you are far more stubborn than before. 50 years is a long time, but I'm sure you'll both come around soon enough. You just need to remember why you love one another.
There was no way around the warring emotions inside her. Pyra narrowed her focus on the glow from the lightning bugs with a frown.
It's not that. Well, not just that. reopening these portals will only invite further strife with the Brotherhood.
She closed her eyes for a moment before turning to look over her shoulder.
Ever since he learned of what transpired at the Battle of Death's Tide, he's become obsessed with eradicating their order. Even though I've told him we've all but abolished their presence here. It's as if... Do you hear that?
A low rumble of tremors silenced the words in her mouth as she looked up.
A blinding flash of blue light split across the heavens like a burst of lightning, illuminating everything around them. And then another. And another. Despite the lack of cloud cover, the sky became a swirling tempest of blue streaks. It was impossible to discern where one ended and another started, until Pyro realized that many of the jagged bolts were simply hanging in the air, expanding and widening. Hondine?
She climbed to her feet as the lightning illuminated something impossibly large as it crawled free from the storm, hovering in midair. It looked, for all the world, like a floating city.
What the hell?
Chester was ducking and dodging the dangerous projectiles loosed from within the halls of the High Inquisitor's grand estate.
Is going...
A blue bolt of energy ripped open in front of him, releasing a massive burst of air that knocked him clean off his feet.
Ah!
With one hand still clenched around the handle of the door, Vel reached out with his other and snatched the Prime Minister before he was launched into the jagged vortex that had torn reality apart just behind them.
Why would I know?
He grit his teeth and, with effort, hauled the man to his feet and shoved him in the direction of the glass elevator located just outside the estate.
Because you were the one just going off about closing the rift!
The ground gave another bone-rattling shake, and Vel could see the start of a large fissure reaching out into the street from one of the fields.
That was about something entirely different.
He threw out his arm, ready to catch the Prime Minister if needed, as the two of them stumbled towards the ornate lift. Chester pounced at the golden lock, his fingers fumbling to push the key into the door.
So, not about the crazy storm of reality tearing lightning things. Got it.
He worked past the trembling in his hand to twist the key, and a resounding click could be heard as the glass door swiveled open. He turned to usher in the cyborg when there was a deafening screech of grinding gears. He looked back to see the entire platform within plummet into empty space. Failing to stave off a hyperventilating panic attack, Chester watched as the entire lift disappeared into the chaos below, the rest of the shaft in a million pieces. Okay, so perhaps a glass elevator was not the safest way to the ground during an earthquake.
We need another way down.
He turned to see his companion staring wide-eyed off into the distance.
How long has that been there?
Vel gestured with a hesitant lift of his hand as a frown tugged at his brow.
Have I just never noticed it before?
Turning in the direction indicated, Chester's own eyes went wide as they cast upon a building in a distant field he had never seen.
No... That's definitely new.
It wasn't so much a building, but more like a medieval castle. And it didn't behave like a normal brick structure should. It was actively unfolding on itself, like a living origami figure. Towers sprouted out of the sides, along with parapets busting out of the ramparts. Bridges and enclosed hallways reached off into space, awaiting to connect to its unformed half. All of it illuminated by a sky of blue fire, dotted with airships spinning wildly in the chaotic storm.
What in the name of the Scholar is happening here?
With nowhere to run, Ondine forced the queen behind her as stone walls sprang up around them like a cage, the roof slamming in over their heads with a loud crash. Someone made a cry of alarm behind them, and she spun, brandishing her halberd. She hesitated at the sight of a scrawny man in a two-piece nightgown cowering behind his wife and child.
"Who are you? Why are you in my house?"
the woman screeched, pulling the copper bed warmer from beneath her mattress like a club. Smiling at such a brazen attitude, Undine kicked open the door to her right and hauled Pyra back out into the night. Only moments ago, they had been running through the dry fields, making their way towards the Infinite Tower when the storm had reached the ground. Now, a sprawling metropolis, illuminated by the constant blue lightning, was materializing into existence around them. Storefronts, cobblestone roads, and curious metal beasts were all appearing between the blades of dead grass and spindly trees.
"Undine! The river!"
The dryad looked over her shoulder to see the city wasn't just contained to land. It was forming above the raging surface of the river, but there was nothing to support the structures. The earth was being swept away as fast as it could materialize. Buildings were dissolving into the waves, and screams erupted in the chaos of buffeting winds and constant roiling thunder. Undine felt the queen lurch towards the devastation, but she reached out and grabbed her by the arm.
"We cannot stop! We must return to the tower at once!"
Pyra yanked herself free and sprinted down the newly formed road.
"I don't know what's happening or why, but those people are dying. They need our help!"
Giving chase, Undine caught something through the flashing light. The floating structure above them was growing legs, monstrous pillars of stone and metal reaching down from the plate to find purchase below. As she followed the queen to the river, she could see one of the legs begin to form above the water and immediately crumble. Like the cry from an ancient dragon, a tremendous roar filled the air as the stone leg shattered and dissolved into the river. Large portions of the floating structure broke free as the entire city listed to one side. Undine felt her heart dip into her feet as she saw a section fracture away and tilt in their direction. Digging a heel into the ground, she put on a burst of speed and snapped up the queen, diving into the roiling water just as debris impacted around them like meteorites.
Angle of slope has reached 15 degrees.
Growling with effort, Vel ran as fast as he could uphill in the freshly tilled earth, but each step came with a struggle as his boots sunk deep into the soft topsoil. He looked back to see Chester was, surprisingly, keeping pace. He was ready to make a snide remark when something behind them tore the laughter from his throat.
"Oh, crap! Boom!"
An airship, ragged from being tossed around like a kite in a storm, impacted the ground less than 30 feet from them, exploding into a hailstorm of metal and wood. As the soil cratered outward, it flung them roughly away, further uphill, and a large stake of timber embedded itself into the fleshy portion of Vel's left arm.
"Are you all right?"
Blinking away the pain, the cyborg rolled over to see Chester had landed practically uninjured. Well, as far as he could tell, anyway. Vel looked down to see a shaft of wood protruding from beneath the muscle in his upper arm, letting out an angry growl.
This was a new coat!
He wrapped his mechanical fingers around the chunk of wood and ripped it free. Before he could find something to bind the wound, however, he felt the sickening sensation of freefall as the entire section of plate dropped some 10 feet before the underlying spiderweb of cables and supports halted the platform's progress. As the ground settled, he began to slide down what had become a steep hill.
Angle of slope has reached 25 degrees.
Clawing at the soft earth with his mechanical hand, Vel finally managed to grab hold of something solid. And as he did, Chester latched onto his injured arm as he slid past. He cried out in pain as he forced himself to keep his grip firm. The sound of metal straining in agony erupted in the chaos, and a large section of the aerial farmland near the edge of the disc crumbled under the pressure, snapping free and falling. Unprepared for the horrors unfolding around them, Chester could only watch as screams exploded into the night.
Angle of slope has reached 30 degrees.
This wasn't good. They needed to get off the platform before the entire thing collapsed. Mel looked back up the incline at the crashed ship. He managed to get his feet underneath him and pulled the Prime Minister to his as well.
You implemented my safety measures on all your ships, right?
Numb to the words in his ears, Chester didn't understand the cyborg at all. His city was under siege, and people were... By the Scholar! All those people!
I...
With another growl, Vel reached out and slapped him with his left hand.
Right? Ow!
Chester shook his head, clearing the fog from his brain. He rubbed at his cheek with confusion.
Yes! I put your stupid request through ages ago! What? Oh!
Dumbfounded, Vel offered the Prime Minister an expectant look.
Let's go already!
He didn't wait for the other man as he began to climb as fast as he could.
I really don't mean to rush you, and perhaps now is not the best time for me to complain, but...
Chester paused, cinching his arms tight around the cyborg's waist as he looked down. They were plummeting from the sky on an island of concrete and steel as it tipped towards the ground at a rapidly increasing speed.
But do you think you could hurry up with a plan already?
Angle of slope has reached 55 degrees.
His hand gripped tight around an exposed length of rebar. Vel waited for the precise moment to let go and release them from the plummeting death trap. A marginally difficult task to do in the best of circumstances, made all the more challenging by the constant screams of panic from his traveling companion.
Will you stop shouting at me? I'm trying to time this just right.
Why must he always have a passenger when plummeting out of the sky?
Angle of slope has reached 75 degrees.
Well, here goes nothing. Vel convinced his mechanical fingers to release their hold on the rebar, and he kicked off, launching himself and the Prime Minister into the air. He hoped there was enough distance between them and the plate. With a small prayer, he reached up and pulled the ripcord near his shoulder. A billowing white cloth unfurled like the wings of a giant moth, spreading open behind them, and with a yank, slowed their descent into something more survivable.
I don't like this! I don't like this at all!
Vel couldn't help the roll of his eyes. How a civilization had ever invented mass air transit, but not the parachute, was beyond him. After surviving his first plunge from the sky, he had insisted that the Prime Minister outfit all ships with them. But, apparently, he should have specified the exact number of chutes needed. Hence why he was sharing one with the screaming man-child instead of each having his own. A rush of wind pushed him further out into open space, and Vel watched in horror as the remnants of the platform he had just been clinging to crumpled into the water.
Wait, water?
He gave his head a shake and looked down once more. Since when did Avis have a ginormous river running through it? The pillar slammed into the water, and the wave it created was catastrophic. It rose dozens of feet into the air before crashing into the city on either side and rushing further downstream. As the wind carried them over the devastation, Vel realized with a jolt that he recognized this area. He had done some work on a building right over there. It was gone now, underwater or collapsed. He had eaten in a cafe not that long ago just around that corner, and he could still make out the top of one of Piper's favorite bakeries. He frowned.
Piper?
He had spotted her figure for only a second, but even at this distance, it had definitely looked like her.
Amy, scan for survivors in that area and bring them up on my display.
Enlarged images popped up into his field of view. There was a man perched atop a building, furiously waving his arms. A stone Goliath was clinging to a branch that had dropped low over the water. And Piper, floating limp on her back as the rushing water carried her closer to the edge of the city.
Why would she be here? She was supposed to be headed for Ospria. Ugh, it doesn't matter, he thought. She was here and in danger of drowning.
He turned his head, looking over his shoulder at the Prime Minister.
I need you to grab hold of the risers. I'm going to disengage.
Chester choked on his response before he managed,
What? Absolutely not!
He looked up and then down below them. They had to still be at least 100 feet above the surface of a raging river. At night.
If you let go now, you might not survive.
Listen, I don't have time to explain.
Vel began unbuckling each of the straps that held him into the harness as the Prime Minister moved to latch onto the risers. As they were carried over her location, he removed the last tether holding him to the chute and let go. Wind rushed up around him, deafening him in his descent. For the briefest of moments, he experienced a dash of déjà vu, or maybe it was a hint of PTSD as he stared down at the rapidly approaching surface of the river. He swallowed down his fears, took a deep breath, and pointed his toes. He didn't actually feel the sting of the impact at first, but, like a swarm of angry bees, he was quickly overwhelmed by the sensation of 1,000 stings across his body. He went rigid for a moment as he felt his boots hit the riverbed. As the cold sensation hit him next, he nearly gasped in a lungful of water and forced his body to engage. Vel kicked and scooped at the water, his injured arm screaming at him to stop as he fought to lift his denser-than-average body to the surface. Even with the night vision in his artificial eye, it was hard to make out anything in the murky depths. Buildings loomed like ancient ruins as the water pulled him through them at disconcerting speeds. He pushed past floating debris and lifeless corpses until his head broke above the water and he sucked in a gasp of air. He looked around, Amy overlaying the obstructions in the river. He spotted Piper nearing a rushing bend of water.
Warning, speed of current increasing.
Vel didn't need Amy to point out that there was likely a drop up ahead. As the buildings gave way to trees and dense shrubbery, he could tell they were nearing the edge of the city. The river was quickly approaching a tailout with a jagged landscape. If they hit any of the rocks, they could get pulled down and quickly drowned in the undertow. He put on a burst of speed to reach the girl. More than once, Vel found himself pulled under by the rapids or slammed into collapsed houses by the unruly topography of the cityscape. Despite his injured arm, he broke the surface again and again in his attempts to reach Piper. After the third time of nearly choking on river water, he managed to wrap his mechanical fingers around the girl's limp arm and pulled her in close. And then they were airborne, flung from the water by the violent tailout and dropped into the plunge pool beneath a shallow waterfall. Vel almost lost his grip, but managed to hang on as his other arm kept them aloft. But the more he struggled to reach the shore, the more the currents pulled him back. At this rate, his body was threatening to go into shock in the frigid waters. Something impacted the surface nearby. Chester splashed frantically, attempting to reach them while still holding tight to the parachute cords with one hand. The canopy of the chute had become tightly wedged into the crook of a tree on the shore.
Are you insane?
He snapped his fingers around the cyborg's mechanical hand, and hauling back against the ropes, began to drag the three of them to the calm water of the shallows. Vel allowed himself to be guided from the turbulent river until he could put his boots in the soft sand. He trudged the rest of the way, pulling Piper along as he did. The weight of his soaking coat hung heavy on his tired shoulders, and he collapsed to his hands and knees as he reached solid ground. He laid the girl down in the muddy grass before flipping over her limp body and checking for a pulse. Vel breathed a sigh of relief when he felt her heartbeat, and she was breathing. And she wasn't Piper. He frowned as he took in her similar yet different appearance. This woman was older, with the same golden hair, but her copper skin was mottled with vitiligo. The similarity was striking. Perhaps an aunt? As he let go of her wrist, he noticed a simple gold band around her ring finger.
"You didn't say anything about Piper being in that chaos,"
Chester exhaled as he slumped into the grass. Vel dragged a hand down his face before collapsing into the sand beside her.
"It's not Piper."
He let out a shuddering breath. His eyes drifted up to the crumbling ruins of Avis Isle. At least this meant Atticus wasn't at the bottom of a river. But on the other hand... A gentle tap at her door pulled Piper from her musings. Turning away from the night view from her window, she slid off the tiny bed and answered the knock.
"What? Why aren't you sleeping?"
Atticus gave his sister a sheepish smile.
"I need to tell you something, and I don't want you to be mad at me."
He twisted his hands together nervously. She let out a heavy sigh.
"Oh, brother, what did you do now?" "Well, Unit 2 and I was inspecting the main thruster of this ship. It's absolutely ancient. I'm surprised we were able to achieve lift at all. You actually need..." "Atticus, stop rambling."
Piper put her hands on her brother's shoulders.
"What happened?"
"Right. Well, it's not something I did so much as something I noticed. There's a lot of blue lights headed our way. Is that normal?"
We thank you for joining us for this chapter of the novel Of Portals and Portents, Book 4 by Leslie Herron, in this ongoing series available here on Tall Tale TV. You can find links in the description to where you can listen to all her books and novellas, with new chapters appearing as they are being written and recorded.
"Any luck?"
"No. Keep looking."
"Aha! Found it! Now what?"
"Good job. Now find another."
"What do you mean, another?"
"As in, a second one?"
"Why would there be a second one?"
Why wouldn't there be?"
"Your instructions clearly stated that each ship should be outfitted with a parathingy. You said nothing about needing more than one."
"I thought that was obvious. They only fit one person."
"Oh, I suppose I should have read more carefully."
"Wow, okay. You know what? Just give it to me."
"What? No. You said it only fits one. I found it. I get to use it." "So, do I just pull this string now, or..."